Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Today we're reading from Canto 10, Chapter 2, Text 15, Prayers by the Demigods. Garbe pranite devakya Rohinim yoga nidraya Aho vishram sito garba Iti pora vichukrusahu Garbe. When the embryo pranite was carried from the womb, devakya of Devaki, Rohinim, to the womb of Rohini, yoga nidraya, by the spiritual energy called Yoga Maya. Aho, alas, Vishram Sita is lost. Garbaha, the embryo. Iti, thus. Poraha, all the inhabitants of the house. Vichukrusuhu, lamented. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. When the child of Devaki was attracted and transferred into the womb of Rohini by Yoga Maya, Devaki seemed to have a miscarriage. Thus all the inhabitants of the palace loudly lamented, "Alas, Devaki has lost her child." Purport. All the inhabitants of the palace includes Kamsa. When everyone lamented, Kamsa also joined in compassion, thinking that perhaps because of drugs or some other external means, Devaki had undergone this abortion. The real story of what happened after Yogamaya attracted the child of Devaki into the womb of Rohini in the 7th month of Rohini's pregnancy is described as follows in the Hari Vangs. At midnight, while Rohini was deeply sleeping, she experienced as if in a dream that she had undergone a miscarriage. After some time, when she awoke, she saw that this had indeed happened, and she was in great anxiety. But Yogamaya then informed her, "O auspicious lady, your child is now being replaced. I am attracting a child from the womb of Devaki, and therefore your child will be known as Shankarshan." The word yoga nidra is significant. When one is spiritually connected through self-realization, one regards his material life as having been like a dream. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 2.69, Yanisha sarva bhutanam tasyam jagrati sangyami yasyam jagrati bhutani sanisha pasyato munahe. What is night for all beings is the time of awakening for the self-controlled. And the time of awakening for all beings is night for the introspective sage. The stage of self-realization is called yoga nidra. All material activities appear to be a dream when one is spiritually awakened. Thus, yoga nidra may be explained to be yoga maya. Om Ajnana Timurandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine. There are several significant words in this sloka. Garbhe, as we know, that means the embryo. Another word is bhrun. So the embryo is growing within the womb of the mother, and by the seventh month, an embryo is quite large, 14 inches. And generally, when a mother unfortunately miscarries in the seventh month, the baby has a good chance of surviving. 7 months, and they're called preemies. They have to stay and get special attention. But 7 months, the child is quite developed. He's now developing the fat on his body because all the organs have been developed. So that's a garbhe. Then we have yoga nidra. Yoga nidra, Prabhupada is explaining here, is the state of yoga nidra, is that of self-realization, when one is under the influence of yoga maya. Now, we know that in the spiritual world, everything is personalized. So the principal consort of Sri Vishnu, this is described in the Brahma Sangita, her name is Rama Devi. And Rama Devi has several names, depending upon her functions. She's also called Yoga Maya, and she's also called Yoga Nidra. So the function of Yoga Maya and Yoga Nidra is to take away the actual consciousness of the devotee within material consciousness so that they're then within Krishna consciousness. So this Yoga Nidra worked on both Devaki and Rohini in this particular leela, because Devaki was not aware that she was having a miscarriage, so-called, because that child was being carried by Yoga Nidra Yoga Maya to the womb of the eternal mother of Shankarshan, Balaram, who is Rohini. So 7 months prior to that, Vasudev had impregnated his wife Rohini. Rohini, as were most of the other wives of Vasudev, she was not one of Devaki's sisters. She was the sister of Vidura. And because Kamsa had attempted to kill Devaki at the time of their marriage, Vasudev secretly married Rohini and impregnated her 7 months prior to this. But because of Kamsa's atrocities, Rohini was very frightened to remain in Mathura. So Vasudev, not only did he send Rohini, but he sent other wives of his to live incognito under the care of his relative or brother, Nanda Maharaj, in the cow village of Gokul. So several of Vasudev's wives were already residing in Gokul. But Rohini, being very special, coming from the Kaurava dynasty, Vidura's sister, she was given some special attention. And when she secretly went to Gokul one evening, she was brought directly to the home of Nanda Maharaj, and she stayed with Yashoda Mayi. So Yashoda Mayi, she was also pregnant at that time. In the month of Magh, Purnima Magh, she was served her husband. And at that time, that night, being exhausted when she was sleeping, she saw, as if in a dream, a beautiful young girl child, and behind her, a young boy. So that was when Yoga Maya became the daughter of Yashoda, and Krishna also became the son of Yashoda. Many times we hear that Yoga Maya is the younger sister of Krishna. So we also have experience when Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu were impregnated by Kashyapa into the womb of Diti, first one child goes in, and that's considered the older child. And then the second child goes in. But when they come out, the second child, the younger one, comes out first, and he's considered the eldest. And then the eldest one comes out second. So sometimes Yogamaya is called the younger sister, sometimes she's called the elder sister. So the two mothers were pregnant at the same time. But this seventh child of Devaki, because Devaki was so afraid of Kamsa, and Krishna had his plans, so he arranged that this seventh child in the 7 month of pregnancy would be transferred to his eternal mother in Gokul, Rohini. And to do this special task, he called his principal potency, Ramadevi, Yogamaya, and in this Leela, she's addressed as Yoga Nidra. So in the dead of night, at midnight, she removed the 7 month garbha of Devaki. Devaki wasn't aware of this. This is the influence of Yogamaya. Although they're taking part in Krishna's pastimes, they don't fully understand what Krishna is arranging. We'll discuss this later. She took that womb, that garbha, and brought it to Rohini. Rohini was already pregnant 7 months. So in her sleep, as if in a dream, she experienced, and this is this word, Vishramsito. Vishramsito in English might mean miscarriage. Actually, it means falling down. So she experienced that that embryo had fallen down on the ground. And then she woke up and she saw the embryo had actually fallen down on the ground. And she was very perturbed. For at least 1 hour, she couldn't understand what had happened, why the baby had fallen from her womb. And then Yoga Nidra, she addressed Rohini. She says, you will have a son. And this son's name will be Shankarshan. And I have brought him and placed him in your womb. So neither Rohini nor Devaki could understand what the plan of the Lord was. They were simply taking part in the pastimes as pure devotees of the Lord. Whatever his arrangement was, they were very happy with that. So now we have the word aho. When aho is used, it's used for two particular emotions. One is ascharya, or wonder, astonishment that something has happened. And the other is khed, grief. So here, this aho is used for both purposes. Because it was so astonishing. How was Yoga Nidra able to accomplish this task? And at the same time, when it was disclosed that Devaki had a miscarriage, everyone was experiencing intense grief within the palace and also within the entire city, all the inhabitants of Mathura. That's where this word, vichukrusuhu, comes. Vichukrusuhu, it means grieving, mourning. Mourning means M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G. It also means gossiping. Now, sometimes, here in India, we have this experience especially. There's something called mob lynching, where the people get together, they hear something, they think that this has happened, and then they'll go kill the person that they think did something wrong. So this gossiping, it's created by sometimes misinformation. They don't understand a situation. They're trying to understand it, so they make up something. So this vichukrusuhu, this gossiping, some people were saying, these are the outer people, they're saying that, oh, because of Kamsa, he must have done something. He must have fed Devaki some drug, some herb, or performed some mantra upon her. And instead of having to wait for the baby to be born, He was able to kill this baby even before he was born. That's what the people were saying, just to try to understand how this miscarriage happened. Then they said, not only was Devaki in such fear of Kamsa that she miscarried, but because he kept her in a prison, her hands, her legs shackled, how can a woman develop a child properly like that? So this is all the fault of Kamsa. They were damning Kamsa for this miscarriage. Inside the palace, Kamsa, it says here, Prabhupada says, Kamsa joined in compassion, thinking that perhaps because of drugs or some other external means, Devaki had undergone this abortion. Now Kamsa, on the other hand, he knew he hadn't done anything. He was thinking Devaki had done it, because already Devaki had seen her 6 sons were killed. So rather than seeing the 7th son killed when he was born, all that labor, all that pain, she aborted the child before he was born. So these are all misinformation. It's like a form of gossip. But on both sides, inside the palace, outside the palace, everyone, they were all mourning in grief because Devaki had lost her 7th child. And now the 8th child was about to come. So when we contemplate the Lord's pastimes, sometimes Krishna is compared to a dramatic actor. And in drama, particularly when you're dealing with the very strict rules of Sanskrit drama, for instance, we have some example in the Chaitanya Charitamrita of the Jagannath Balabha Natakam. Now, it's not explained what that drama is in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. If you ever read it, it's very beautiful, very intimate, about Radharani being so attracted to Krishna, she writes him a letter and he rejects her, then he feels... But what we do hear about is behind the scenes. So there are 3 aspects in any type of leela, pastime, drama. And that is behind the scenes, the actual performance of the leela, and how the audience is going to react to that leela. So in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, taking this example of Jagannath Balabha Natakam, we are referred to the behind the scenes, because Ramananda Roy, he took so much care in preparing the characters in his play. He wanted to make sure that they were exactly the way he wanted them to perform. And he personally trained them, he bathed them, he dressed them, he decorated them, so that they would exactly perform, so that the audience would get the reaction that he wanted. So these 3 aspects are always there, even in Krishna Leela. Sometimes, Sukadeva Goswami, while he's describing these Krishna Leela to Pariksit, because this is what Pariksit Maharaj requested him to do, that I'm thirsting to hear all these pastimes. You tell me what I've asked and you also tell me what I haven't asked. So sometimes he gives a glimpse of behind the scenes. Nala Kuvera and Manigriva. He tells Pariksit Maharaj, previously they were the sons of Kuvera, but because of false bride caused by wealth, they committed an offense at the lotus feet of Narada Muni. Narada Muni cursed them. Now they've taken birth as these twin trees. And Narada Muni gave them a special blessing that they would be able to remember their offense so they would never do it again. And then he gave them a blessing because they apologized. He blessed them that at the end of the 28th Dwapara Yuga in Vaivasvatamanu Manvantar, Lord Krishna will appear. You'll be 2 trees in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj. By his touch, you'll be liberated. So a little bit he told in that particular leela about the behind the scenes. Now the audience, they only saw the 2 trees and Krishna. And as most of us, when we're reading Krishna leela, we only see the 3-dimensional aspect of those leelas. Two-dimension means like a picture, flat. Three-dimension means it has some shape, some form. And then there's a fourth dimension. And that fourth dimension we can call time. Now, this fourth dimension is when we understand, according to the influence of time, how this shape has come about. And Sukadeva Goswami, in his ecstasies of describing the different leelas, sometimes he would describe that fourth dimension. He also described Kaliya, why Kaliya came to stay in the Jamuna, and how Subhari Muni cursed Garuda. There was some dimension to it, added dimension, other than just hearing the leela of how Krishna danced on the heads of Kaliya. But each and every demon has this fourth dimension of how they got the opportunity to come into Krishna Leela. Now, we know that Krishna has 64 qualities. And one of his qualities is called Hatagir Atidayak. And that means that anyone who comes into contact with Krishna, he gets the mercy of Krishna. And Krishna is compared to fire. If you know the fire is going to burn, if you don't know the fire is going to burn, that fire will still burn you. A little child will get burned, and the person who's working with the fire, they'll also get burned if they're inattentive. So these demons, it so happens, we can say there were about 20 demons that Krishna liberated during his Braja and Mathura pastimes. Out of those 20 demons, two-thirds of them had been either devotees of the Lord or great kings of the Lord. Great kings, kshatriyas, who were performing all their dharmic activities as kings in their previous birth. But due to some slight offense, and those offenses are studied very carefully by the devotees so that they can avoid those offenses. And who were those offenses committed towards? They were committed towards great rishis and munis. And the munis cursed those great devotees. So that they would become purified of the reaction of their offenses. And many of these great devotees, who were two-thirds of the demons, after they contact Krishna because he's Atidayak, they then mounted a chariot, or by some process they returned to Goloka Vrindavan in their original forms, or they may have returned to their places in heaven, now purified, not going to engage in sense gratification anymore. And from their heavenly situation, they were able to proceed to Goloka Vrindavan. Again, we have the example of Nala Kubara and Manigriva. What's described by Jiva Goswami is, when they attained their forms again as the sons of Kubara, and they returned to the heavenly planets, they didn't engage in any sense gratification after that. And then after that birth, they returned to their eternal forms in Goloka Vrindavan, and they were Snigdhakanta and Madhukanta, the two bandiyas who daily, morning and evening, would come to the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj and describe all the beautiful pastimes of the Lord. And that's their eternal activities, these twin boys. So this fourth dimension, if we study each one of the demons, we've heard that Putana, she was the daughter of Bali Maharaj. Now, the one-third of the demons that came from demoniac families, some of them were, two of them were the sons of Bali Maharaj, one of them was the daughter of Bali Maharaj, one of them was the son of Mura, one of them was the son of Hiranyaksha, one of them was the son of Hiranyakashipu, who was that? That was Kalanemi, Kamsa. And one of them was the son of Hayagriva, another great demon. One of them was the son of Maya Danava. So they were coming from very powerful demoniac families. So we can do a little microscopic research on Kamsa, because as we go through each of these pastimes, we can study very carefully this fourth dimension, the time factor of these demons, why they took birth in Krishna, to take part in Krishna Leela, what their past was, what the Leela is, and how they attain liberation, either as Sarupya Mukti or Salokya Mukti, returning to Goloka Vrindavan. So, Kalanimi, we've heard Kashyapa Muni, he had so many wives, and from them the full progeny was created, animals, trees, demons, birds, demigods. And one of the youngest daughter, the youngest wife, Diti, she didn't follow her husband's advice. Out of lust, out of envy, she compelled him to impregnate her, and from her the Daityas came. From Diti came the Daityas. And the most powerful of those Daityas, of course, were her first two sons, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyakashipu had a son, Kalanimi, and at the time of churning the ocean of milk, there was a fight afterwards because Krishna, in the form of Mohini Murti, he tricked all the demons. He gave all the nectar to the demigods. And the Senapati of the demons was Kalanimi. So in Dharmic Yuds, they match up who they're going to fight with. So Kalanimi, being the most powerful of all the demons, he matched with Vishnu. So he and Vishnu fought, and Vishnu killed him. But Sukracharya, because he had the Sanjivani Vidya, he brought Kalanimi back to life. And Kalanimi, because he remembered he had been killed by Vishnu, he was only thinking, how am I going to kill Vishnu now? Now I've got my life back. So he decided to perform tapasya, and he went to Mandaranchala, and for 36,000 years, he worshipped Lord Brahma. Because when there are material desires, they don't worship Vishnu, they worship the demigods. 36,000 years, he only drank the juice of Durvagas. Durva grass, it grows here. It's quite common. It's what you use for your pujas. So after 36,000 years, just like Hiranyakashipu, he was just reduced to bones, and the ants were crawling all over him. Brahma, to show mercy, came before him, and he asked for the boon that he wouldn't be killed by any demigod. He thought he was so powerful, he has nothing else to worry, just the demigods. So he got that boon, and then he took birth, a special birth, as Kamsa, not from Ugrasen though, from a yaksha. And yakshas have divine powers. So Gobila impregnated Padmavati. Ugrasen was absent at the time. She had gone to her father's home. She was remembering her husband. And the yakshas can read the minds. They have that type of mystic power. So this yaksha Gobila, he understood that Padmavati was thinking of her husband and was missing him. So he took the form of her husband and impregnated her with Kamsa. And Padmavati, when she came to understand this isn't my husband, she wanted to curse Gobila. But Gobila, he convinced her that you will have a very powerful, he will not be an ordinary human being because he'll be my son. He'll have so many great powers. So you should be happy with this son. But she was still angry, so although he was going to be very powerful, she even cursed the son that he'll be a Rakshasa. And then Gobila, he further cursed the son. So Kamsa, from the beginning, he had a very extraordinary conception. And although Ugrasen was unaware that it wasn't his son, he saw that from the time of his childhood, he didn't behave like an ordinary religious child. He was very interesting in fighting and wrestling, and he gravitated towards demoniac association. So Kamsa, he began to collect, as his friends, associates, and servants, all the great demons who were on the earth at that time. Many of them lived in what present day is Assam, in Bangabhumi, Bangladesh. It wasn't broken up into all these little states at that time. It was a big area. So he went there to those places, defeated those demons, brought them back to Mathura, and made them into his servants. He also went to Madhya Pradesh. Now, each of these different demons, because in their previous life, having offended some great devotee, or having been born in a good family, but committing some offense in their puja, in their seva, they were cursed also. So, for instance, five were the sons of a Brahmin, but they were very attracted to wrestling. So instead of doing their Vedic studies and their japa, they would go to the home of Bali Maharaj to learn wrestling. So their own father cursed them that you'll take birth as demons so you can wrestle all you want. They were the five wrestlers. They lived in a place called Mahishmatipur. That's in Madhya Pradesh. So Kamsa searched out everywhere. He made friends with Kaliyavana in Mlechadesh. He made friends with Devita in Prashna, near Gujarat, one mountain. He made friends with every demon that was on the planet. Not only demons, he even approached Parshuram. And he satisfied Parshuram with his might and with his humility. And it was Parshuram who gave him that huge bow. And Parshuram told him in advance that with this bow you can conquer everywhere. It's the Lord's bow, his own dhanush. But whoever breaks this bow, he will be the person who can conquer you and kill you. So he was forewarned of this. And when he had collected all of these demon friends, he made friends with Banasura, with Narakasura, everyone. He found Aga on the shore of the ocean, and Baka, everyone he brought to Mathura to become his ministers. And then he made a huge army of all these demons, and with this army of demons and the bow of the Lord, he went to Amaravati, defeated Indra and the demigods, and stole the singhasan and the umbrella, and brought that back to Mathura, and that was what he sat upon. And within the palace, no one outside the palace knew this, but he imprisoned his own father, and the people were wondering, why isn't Ugrasen coming out anymore for public functions? That was because he was imprisoned by Kamsa, because he had made all of his generals and army into these demons, so they eat what. And when Kamsa said, imprison my father, they followed his order. And then at that time, Kamsa publicly announced that I am now the king. So these are the activities of Kamsa. And then we hear that aside from his activities, he had eight brothers. He had so many of these demons who were following him. And one by one, to become freed from the offenses from their previous birth, Kamsa sent them to be killed by Krishna or Balaram. Now when Krishna in the form of Nrisimhadev killed Hiranyakashipu, he assured Prahlad Maharaj that I will not kill anyone in your family. So therefore, the son of Bali, his name was Sahasika, he went once and he was enjoying with many women, the apsaras, and because of their dancing and their singing, in a cave nearby, Durvasamuni was in deep meditation upon Lord Krishna, and his meditation was disturbed. So he came out of his cave, he saw Sahasrika, and he cursed him that you're enjoying with these young girls just like a donkey. So you just become a donkey. You want to enjoy like that? Become a donkey. Prabhupada gives that example so many times. Why surf? Just become a fish if you want to enjoy in the ocean all day. So Durvasamuni used the same philosophy. He said, you want to enjoy like a donkey? Then I bless you. Become a donkey. So this son of Bali, he became Denukasura. And that's why when the audience sees the pastime of the Denukasura Vad, we see that Krishna told Balaram to kill him. We don't know why, but when we look in this fourth dimension of time, then we understand that Krishna had promised Prahlad Maharaj that he wouldn't kill any of his anyone in his family. So therefore he had Balaram kill Denukasura. Then Putana, being the first, she, as the daughter of Bali, when she saw beautiful Vamanadev, she became very attracted to him, and she was thinking, if I could just have him as a son, I would feed him my breast milk, I would be so happy seeing his smiling face. But then after Vamanadev cheated her father, she said, oh, and while I'm feeding him, I'm going to give him some poison to kill him because he's so treacherous. So the Supreme Lord, being so merciful, he understood the two desires of this woman, Ratnamala, and therefore he fulfilled her desires and he gave her a place in Goloka Vrindavan, being the daughter of Bali Maharaj. We have also Mandagati, another son of Bali Maharaj. Mandagati was very powerful, like thousands of elephants. And Bali Maharaj's son, he had some pious credits. He was going one day to take darshan of Rangaji. He was on Rangadev Yatra. And just like we have here at nighttime now, such a crowd of people. And unless we're very controlled, we can't take the crowd. Some of us run out, some of us don't even come in, because crowds can be very scary sometimes, especially when you're offering deeps, get your hair, your clothes lit. So this Mandagati, he was in a crowd of people going to see Rangadev, and he couldn't control himself, being so powerful. With his arms, he started to push the people away and crush the people, and amongst the crowd was a very old sage named Tritamuni, and he got thrown down. And when Tritamuni saw that this whole disturbance was being caused by Mandagati, he cursed him. He said, you're acting just like a mad elephant, so I curse you, become a mad elephant. And exactly at that time, just like when a snake loses his skin, he lost his body, and he's seeing how powerful the sage was, he immediately begged the sage for pardon. And the sage then blessed him. Well, yes, you'll become a mad elephant. He became Kuvalayapida. But by the touch of Krishna, you'll also be liberated. So many of these demons who had committed an offense to sages, they were liberated. And many of these devotees who had committed offenses perhaps in their seva, they were able to go to Goloka Vrindavan. There was one great devotee, his name was Vijay, and he was the son of, we've heard about Huhu, the king of the Gandharvas. Now he was such a great devotee that just like Narada Muni, he carried a veena, and he was always singing the glories of Vishnu, wandering about within the heavenly planets. But by accident one day, because Kuvera, he was a great devotee of Lord Shiva, and he had a private garden, just like we have a garden for Krishna Balaram, Radhashyam Sundar Gornitai. We don't want anybody to come in our garden and pick their flowers because we need those garlands for puja. And just next to our temple, to our goshala, you'll see there's a Jhunjhunwala mandir. So in this Jhunjhunwala property, there's a Shivaji temple. And if you go in there, all of the flowers that one offers to Lord Shiva are growing there. It's like you're going in another planet. I don't know if it's still like this, but in Prabhupada's days, when we would go wander in there, all the flowers that we never offered to Krishna are growing in that flower to offer to Lord Shiva. So Kubera had that type of a garden. And he made a curse that anyone, if he's a man, if he's a demigod, anything, if he enters into that garden, he'll become a demon. So Vijay, in his ecstasy of singing the glories of Lord Vishnu, he accidentally wandered into Kubera's garden, Chaitaradban, and he immediately became a demon, a Rakshasa. And he went to Kubera and he prayed to him. He said, I'm a devotee, you made me into a demon. And Kubera said, all right, you're a demon because of the curse. He became Pralambasura. But despite this curse, you will be killed by Baladev and go to the spiritual world. So each one of these pastimes, we have to go very deeply, not just be an audience watching a show, not just be a spectator. We have to go behind the scenes. We have to study each and every demon. Now, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he helps the audience, us, we're the audience. He tells us what is the inner meaning of each of these demons, because he explains to us a fifth dimension. He explains that these demons are actually the dirtiness in our own hearts. And when Krishna kills these demons, we should pray to Krishna that each one of these demons, whatever they represent, that Krishna, you please kill this demon in my heart also. Some of the demons, for instance, Putana, she was the example of a pseudo-guru. You think you're getting nectar, but actually you're being fed poison when you approach a cheater guru. And then Trinavarta, due to false philosophies, we become so confused, just like a whirlwind. So each one of these demons, by the mercy of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, we're able to understand what they represent. And when we meditate on these pastimes of killing these demons, not just like a show, not just watching some fun, like little kids, we understand that Krishna is actually killing all of these unwanted qualities within our heart. So we understand where they're coming from, how they had the great fortune to be killed by Krishna or Balaram, where they went, whether they went to the heavenly planets, whether they were merely liberated. The dobi of Krishna, of Kamsa, three births. First he was a parrot, and he and Amina used to go to listen to Valmiki teach the Ramayana to his disciples. This was before Sita and Ram even met each other. He had already written the Ramayana. And the parrot and the Mina would listen very carefully to the Ramayana, and they would repeat it. One time they flew to Mithila, and they were repeating this Ramayana, and Sita Devi heard them. And she arranged that they were both caught in a cage. And she said to them, I want to keep you here. I'm Sita Devi. I didn't know about these pastimes. I want to hear all these pastimes. How did you hear them? They told her. They heard from Valmiki. So she said, you stay here in this cage and you tell me these pastimes until Ram comes here to marry me. So the Mina, being a pure devotee of Ram, he was so distressed to be kept in a cage. He immediately thought of Ram and he gave up his body. The parrot, he was too attached to his wife. And he cursed Sita that just as you have separated me from my beloved wife, so you will be separated from Lord Ram. So he committed an offense to Sita, and then he gave up his body. And because he offended Mother Sita, he took birth as the lowly Dobi in Ram Lila in Ayodhya. And because of him, Ram gave up the association of Sita. So two births then. He offended Sita, then he offended Lord Ram, and then because of these two offenses, he became the Dobi of Kamsa. And then, when Krishna, just having come from Vrindavan, they were just entering Mathura, they saw these beautiful clothes the Dobi was carrying. He said, "You give us these clothes." And the Dobi then, in his foolishness, low-class person, he started to offend Krishna. He said, "You come from the jungle. All you wear is copan. You don't need these clothes. You get out of here or else I'll have you thrown in jail." So then with that, Krishna, out of his great mercy, he just took his hand and sliced off his head. And with that one slice, he was freed of three births of offenses. So that's how merciful Krishna is. So when we hear these wonderful pastimes, Baka. Baka was one of the sons of one of the demons, I forget which one, maybe it was Mura. He went to the ashram of Jajali Muni. And there he took a cane and he was piercing the fish and eating the fish. And Jajali Muni got very upset with him. He said, "You're acting just like a crane, so become a crane." So then, his name was Utkala, he surrendered to the Muni. He said, "Please, please protect me. I'm sorry." Then he said sorry after he got his punishment. That's the difference between foolish people and intelligent people. They think before they do things. So then he said, "All right, you'll become a crane, but then Krishna, by his touch, he'll kill you, and then you'll get liberated." So many of these demons, so-called, they were great devotees. Another one, the sons of a Brahmin, they were sent by their father because he was worshipping Lord Shiva. They were sent to pick 1,000 lotuses. So they picked the lotuses, they were bringing to his father, but being young boys, they smelled the lotuses. So because they committed that offense in the seva, they also had to become demons who were killed by Krishna. So as we gradually progress, now we're concentrating on Kamsa's atrocities, how he was able to build his great force of demons, and how through Krishna's mercy, he inspired Kamsa to send all of these demons to be killed by Krishna and Balaram so they could all be liberated. So we have to look behind the scenes, we have to look in our own heart, the demons living there, and we shouldn't just take these as children's stories. These are for our benefit so that we can avoid offenses and not have to take further births as many of these devotees had to do, simply because they didn't show proper respect to great sages, or they didn't perform their seva properly, or they openly offended the Lord, as did the parrot in the dobi. And we have to be very careful in our own life that we don't commit offense to the devotees, to our guru. Aristasura, he was a very great Brahmin, a disciple of Brihaspati in the heavenly planets. And one day, he was sitting before his guru, Brihaspati, and he put his leg out. So his feet were facing Brihaspati. Brihaspati cursed him. He said, "That's the way a bull sits. You look how the bulls sit, their legs are out. He'll become a bull." He became Aristasura. So these are great Brahmins. They were devotees. But because they committed an offense, they got to take birth, they got to get liberated by Krishna and Balaram. So let us be very cautious These reading of the demons, killings, Krishna's pastimes, they're all for our purification as the audience, but we should look behind the scenes and we should see why Krishna killed these people. What had they done so that I can avoid also these offenses in my devotional service? Thank you very much. Any questions? We want to welcome His Grace Lakshmi Narayan Prabhu. We're hearing his name every day. And this will go on for a long, long time. Thank you. He's sponsoring the Rajbhog daily for Krishna and Balaram, their lordships. Yes, Prabhu. Yes, there are differences. We know that there are five different types of liberation. So liberation itself means that any sinful activities performed, he's free from that reaction. He's come to the zero point. And then there are different types of liberation. Sayujya, he might enter into the impersonal effulgence of the Lord. Salokya, he might go to the same planet as the Lord. Sarupya, Kamsa attained Sarupya. His brothers also attained Sarupya because they were so absorbed in meditation on Krishna. Sarshti, to get the same opulences as the Lord. And Samipya, to live near the Lord. So those are the five different types of liberation. In general, liberation means to be freed from the reactions to our past sinful activities for many, many births. Krishna brings you to that point, and then you can proceed in your advancement back to the spiritual world. Okay. Yes, Prabhu?
Hare Krishna. Thank you for the nice class. As you said, like you are giving examples of kings who committed some offense and, you know, they were being cursed and Krishna gave them liberation. So now in Kali Yuga, if you see practically, it's impossible, like, you know, either commit offense physically or like mentally commit offense, by chanting also sometimes commit some offense. So what will be like? How do we get rid of this? Like, what will be our destiny in this case? Because at one side we are trying to avoid offenses, but by chanting, and we try our best to do nice chanting, but sometimes the mind wanders and sometimes we think something else, and then we also commit so much offenses. So how do we get rid of this? Or how do you overcome this?
Yes, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he answers that question. He says in Kali Yuga, the Nam avatar is our only hope. If we take full shelter of the holy name, then we can, just chanting the name of Krishna once, we become fully liberated. But if we absorb ourselves in the holy name, then we have a chance of becoming free from this bhava sagar and returning back to Krishna. So Kali Yuga, it's made very easy by the Supreme Lord, by Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda Prabhu's mercy. We simply take shelter of the holy name, meditate very deeply on the sound vibrations, and just as Kamsa, he was constantly meditating on the form of the Lord with a chakra in his hand. So he attained liberation, he attained Sarupya in Vaikuntha by meditating on that form. So when we chant the holy name, the Leela, the Roop, the Gun, the Nam, they're all together. So simply by chanting the holy name, all of those things are manifested within our mind. And then we can have manifested within our mind all these leelas, the qualities of the Lord, simply by chanting the holy name. So chant Hare Krishna and be happy.
Hare Krishna, Mother. Thank you. It was a very eye-opening lecture. I just want to ask you, how do we reconcile the concept of causeless mercy with the fourth dimension you've talked about?
With the what?
How do we reconcile the concept of causeless mercy of Krishna with the fourth dimension you've talked about?
Yes.
Because it sort of provides a reason why these demons came into the sight of Krishna and they got mercy. I'm sure it does not undertone the causeless mercy, but it sort of provides a cause for Krishna's mercy to have been given to all these people because they were somehow blessed by various sages while being cursed.
Well, in the very beginning, we described one of the 64 qualities, Hatagir Ati Dayak, and that quality is compared to fire. So Krishna's causeless mercy, no matter what that time element was, where a person is coming from, all of those things, no matter who you are, when you touch fire, you get burnt. So no matter where you come from, what offense you committed, what birth you took, where you were born, nothing matters. When you come in contact with Krishna, you get his mercy. So that's why, of course, because we have this lifetime, we want to absorb ourselves in Krishna Leela, in Krishna Smaranam. So Srimad Bhagavatam gives us ample opportunity to investigate Krishna Leela in all of his avatars so that our mind is always absorbed in Krishna some way or other. But despite all of that, even if we don't study, if we can't study, if we can't read, if we simply come in contact with Krishna anyway, anyhow, now through his holy name, we'll still get that causeless mercy from him. But these histories, these stories, these chronologies, that's to help us to purify our own consciousness and heart so that we won't commit these offenses. It's many, many dimensions. You understand?
Just one more point. So are you also suggesting that, I understand that once you come in contact with Krishna, you get the mercy. But to come in contact with Krishna, so are you suggesting that there's always a reason to come in contact with Krishna? I mean,
well, the easiest way to contact Krishna is chanting his holy name. So wherever you're coming from, whoever you are, whoever your parents are, whatever offenses you committed, when you chant the holy name, you get Krishna's causeless mercy. Because that holy name also acts just as fire. Because the name isn't a representative of Krishna. Krishna is directly present in his name. When you're chanting Hare Krishna, Radha and Krishna are dancing on your tongue. So you just have to meditate like that, and you get the causeless mercy. So even if you don't read, if you can't do anything else, just chant Hare Krishna and you get his causeless mercy, wherever you're coming from. Okay? All right. Thank you very much. Oh, Mataji?
Just one question, Mataji. I want to ask, what happened with this Gandhi which fall down from Rohini's womb?
It's not mentioned anywhere what happened to that garba. Yes. I searched for it. I couldn't find, at least in the books that I have at hand, I couldn't find anywhere what happened.
Yeah. Vasudeva.
Not mentioned. Maybe as soon as I find out, I'll let you know, okay?
Thank you.
All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.